See why more people pick Pat Peck Honda. Shop over 700 of your favorite new Hondas, like a new 2019 Honda Accord LX front-wheel drive sedan. Lease for $249 a month, 36 months, 12,000 miles per year, and zero security deposit. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport. Online at patpeckhonda.com. Stock number KA142993. Automatic $2,099 down payment plus tax, tax, and title fee to qualified buyer. See dealer for details. Ends 10/31/19. See why more people pick Pat Peck Honda. Shop over 700 of your favorite new Hondas, like a new 2019 Honda Accord LX front-wheel drive sedan. Lease for $249 a month, 36 months, 12,000 miles per year, and zero security deposit. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport. Online at patpeckhonda.com. Stock number KA142993. Automatic $2,099 down payment plus tax, tax, and title fee to qualified buyer. See dealer for details. Ends 10/31/19.
Normal X Hour with Dr. John DeSalvo and Seraphine Hurley. And I'm John, and that's Seraphine, if you didn't know. And I love the way you look, Seraphine. You look gorgeous. Besides being this lady is not only beautiful, but she's smart, talented, and she puts up with me. So you can't ask for anything more than that. How you doing tonight?
Thank you. I'm tired, but I'm hanging in there. But thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I kind of real excited about the show, and just thought we could have some fun for a few minutes first. If you had any questions, there's a lot of activity on my website, you know.
Cool. Are you the third Blues brother?
You know, I'm so sick of the Blues brothers. I have that picture, you know, me and my uncle from when I was back in the 70s. And everyone says it's the Blues Brothers. It's like, come on, please, you know. It was one of my favorite movies, so I shouldn't be. Animal House, Blues Brothers, you know, all those. But I am.
From Gad.
I decided to kind of go public, you know, with all the secret research I've been doing. And people know I've been involved in alien research. And I sneaked out from the company, the contracting company, a non-disclosure agreement I had to sign when I started working. And I'll just read a few of them. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but maybe the audience would be interested. And then we get into our topic. It says alien non-disclosure agreement, NDA, Arctic ARRTC Consolidated Research Corporation. You know, there, a lot of these are contracted, and it's I blank, you know, agreeing not to discuss, disseminate, distribute, inform, et cetera, any of the information, right? You know, standard, keep your damn mouth shut or you're in trouble, right? Number one. Number two, they want to indemnify themselves in case something happens to you. You can't go back and say, hey, I caught. So it's like, I indemnify the company of any alien viruses or bacteria I may have picked up during my research. And here's the important part, or any new traits I may have acquired, like moving faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, or being able to leap tall buildings with a single bound. The third one is really related to me. I agree not to socialize, date, or offer favors to any of the aliens on premises and our research. Having coffee with them on coffee breaks is okay, but only if the name party pays for the coffee, as the cafeteria does not accept alien currency. That's fair. I can take them out to currency, but I can't date them. Not that they would want to date me.
You can take them out for currency, but you can't date them?
Yeah. I guess. Yeah, this one, you're going to love this one.
That's funny.
No telling lame jokes to aliens during research, as they may think you're serious and ruin the integrity of our experiments. Okay, now this is the last one. And you are not to say to them, I think they wrote this last one in because they knew me. I don't know if this goes to everybody, but... And you are not to say to them when they ask you about our world, but what the blank do I know anyway? Because this could cause confusion and make our species look stupid. Anyway, I, John DeSalvo, under oath, swear to abide by these stupid regulations. But what the blank do we know anyway? That is why we have the aliens here to ask them. That was the non-disclosure agreement. I thought I'd go public with it.
Nice.
Thank you.
Oh, that was cool.
Your turn.
Especially about trading currency with aliens for dates.
But I mean, you know, our world could come to something like that. You never know. You gotta have a little humor. What do you want to talk about for a few minutes before we get into the subjects? I always like when you come up with something.
So alien life forms, because you know, alien germs, alien this and alien that. When the military actually said that recently that the film that was actually leaked was in fact unidentified aerial phenomena, were you shocked that they actually disclosed that, or did you think that they would at some point disclose it was aerial phenomenon?
Can I tell you something?
Hey.
Nothing's leaked unless they want it.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I know that. But at the same time, how do you feel about that? Do you think that it's because full disclosure is creeping in on them? Or do you think it's...
Well, as you know, without getting into it, I believe almost everything out there regarding UFOs and aliens is psychological warfare, which I was told by very high people. They told me that this whole alien thing is the biggest PSYOP project since the Manhattan Project. Mm-hmm. They want the public to believe they're covering up UFOs and alien contacts. They want that. They wanted that since Roswell. That was the psychological operation, because they're covering up something bigger. Not right. The situation. And we've discussed this. You can go back, and they first said it was a weather balloon. And everybody, I mean, you got debris all over the, I can't remember, the farms and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Then they said it was Project Mogul, and Project Mogul didn't start to 3 or 4 months after Roswell. Then right. They, I don't know if you heard this one. This is the next one that they were coming out with. I don't know if they ever did, but they were testing a nuclear-powered airplane, and they had victims from Hiroshima in there to test the radioactivity on them, and that's why they look like aliens, but, you know, they were like Chinese-looking. Then they, I mean, it's one after another. So what they're doing is they're putting stuff out there to try to make you think they're covering it up by making slips. And I'll tell you one thing. These people who are involved in PSYOPs have 40 years' experience doing it, and do you think people like us can even figure it out, and they're going to make slips, you know? So I don't buy any of it. And I don't know what they're really hiding, because, you know, I may hear something from a very high up official, but how do I know he's not being fooled? Right. Mm-hmm. So, but I believe all the UFO phenomena, all the stuff can be boiled down to something about the dimensions and the multi-universe. Cause remember, that's my research. And why I'm working with this former NSA cryptologist, and he kind of suggested to me going to the multi-universe research area, which is interesting. And there are actually a lot of papers published on that, some classified, some not. But the point being is, I think there's something so big, I don't know what it is, and if I did, I probably couldn't tell, so big that they want to cover it up with something so big. And what's so big? You know, extraterrestrial. So I don't know. And it could be, you know, maybe they're trying to desensitize the population. I worked with Colonel Jim Irwin of Apollo 15 on a project. We were good, really good friends. And he never said anything to me. And when I worked with Joe Paolella, who was a Secret Service agent to 4 U.S. presidents, including JFK, mm-hmm. I asked Joe before he died, and all the years you were a Secret Service agent to 4 presidents, you know, I mean, he was in there the night we had the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I said to Joe, how close did we come to a war? He said, John, we came so close, you wouldn't believe. He was everywhere. I asked him, he said he never, ever heard anything about UFOs and extraterrestrials, which makes me think the president probably doesn't even know what's going on. Whatever it is, it's much higher. Presidents come and go, but this stuff has been around for... So all I'm saying is I don't know, but I'm always suspicious when something comes out and says, oh, here's more information. So, but there is something. There's no question. What's your take on it? That's kind of...
Well, my take on it, I believe that it's because disclosure is going to happen more or less It's not because the government's going to disclose it to us. It's because something very large is going to happen, and they're not going to be able to control the amount of people that see it.
That's interesting. I like that. Very good. See, I said this lady was smart. No, I like that. Very good possibility. And you know what's so fascinating is that there's so much going on. You know, our technology is probably 20 years behind what the government already has. You know that. I mean, they have so far advanced technology, and they are hiding it. And I can understand why, because if it came out, would we be forced to share it with other governments? Would they say, oh, the UN has to come in? And no, I really care about the defense of our country. So I want us to have the strongest and best defense. So, you know, other people think, well, there should be more disclosure. It's a matter of opinion. But my first concern is the safety of this country. So, you know, when you say I want to believe in the X-Files, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth. And here's what I think. And I want to get your take on this. I think our biggest fear, our biggest threat is the DNA research that's going on more than anything else, by far, by a thousandfold, more than CERN, more than, you know, government weaponry projects, the DNA, that we're going to screw up our species. We're going to introduce something into the DNA that's going to spread, and who knows? What do you think of that angle?
But I want to be part human, part cat, and part dinosaur. You're going to ruin my dream. I want to become a cybernetic dinosaur cat person.
Don't become a mosquito. That's the only thing. Okay, I don't No, but I mean, you know, and the problem is that research would be the most secretive. And did you ever read the book? There's a really good science fiction book out by, I think it's Greg Bear, called Darwin's Radio. And I don't want to give it away, but it has something to do with that. Darwin's Radio. And Greg Bear is a very, and I know you like science fiction.
Oh,
but
I love it.
My son recommended it, and I had no idea, but it's almost similar to what I would have speculated on. And I wonder if he kind of knew, these science fiction writers, don't you think, Seraphine, they know more than they are putting out? They say it's science fiction, but they know a lot of it is truth, and they're kind of disguising it.
Well, like Isaac Asimov, he predicted stuff to happen in his writings. And so did a lot of other sci-fi writers. It's like aside from flying cars and everything else, the anti-gravity monorails. I mean, Tokyo's had them for years now.
Yeah.
And now they've been using them for carnival rides in major attractions like Disney World and Disneyland, and some of the larger parks like Busch Gardens and stuff have them. You know, but as far as DNA splicing and stuff goes, my major thing is, since, you know, I read Jurassic Park, I didn't just watch the movie, but I read it after my mom did. And I just sat there after I read the first few chapters, and I'm like, oh my gosh, even though I wasn't even 18 years old back then, when I read it, I was like, only bad things are going to happen, because I was with the mathematician on this, that nature will take its course no matter what. Yes. You're not going to be able to engineer that. That nature's going to find a way to mess up your whole Kool-Aid. It's not going to, you're going to think you can control it, but you can only control it to a certain extent. And that wild animal is always going to be a wild animal.
I you know what? I couldn't have said it any better. I think you're right on. And that's why I said I feel that's our biggest threat. And I don't want to mention names or institutions, but many years ago, maybe decades ago, I knew and did some correspondence and work with a group in another country that was experimenting with altered brain patterns called, you know, higher states of consciousness. And they would try to reprogram the brain, but it really had to be tied into like a DNA, almost like a remote viewing change. I know this sounds crazy, but the person who was director would only let people involved in the project who were like not married and had no kids, because the mortality rate was about 50%, and only MDs and PhDs were involved. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So, and I went through some of that, and it does work. But the problem why the mortality rate was so high is that people in the research group tried to tune on some DNA genomes that shouldn't have been turned on, and they made a mistake or some over, and it killed them. And he wrote a book on it, so it's not secret. And he dedicates the acknowledgement to a whole list of names, all MDs and PhDs that died mm-hmm. during the project. So it's not a joke. And that was like decades ago. And the thing is, though, it could bring our species to a higher state of consciousness, like a next jump in evolution. Now, would we look? Oh, that's a question for you. Would that look as a threat to us? Like now, would this new species look at us as monkeys? And mm-hmm. or would it be that maybe we all would eventually, you know, because evolution takes, you know, supposedly millions of years, and then Lamarck and others, there's that fast jump theory, you know, 10,000. But what if it was a matter of hundreds of years or less? I mean, it's scary, you know, it's very scary. But I also said, I don't really have hope for our world unless there's an upliftment in consciousness. But I was thinking more spiritual, you know, Seraphine, like what stuff we do, you know, the mystical stuff and the meditation, yeah. the good stuff, not the idea of a gene jump. But what do you think? Could that be? I mean, I think people would look at that as a threat. I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, I think that not as a, I don't think that we would look at it as a threat, but it's potentially that that next generational jump might look back at us like we're a threat, and we're looking at genocide. That if they think that we're a bunch of monkeys, then that would be a reason to wipe us out, because we are generationally done, because we have sicknesses, we have mental issues, we've got speech issues, we've got decision making issues, spiritual issues, all these other things. And if that other human being of sorts thinks it's better and more prime than us, then we're looking at an apex predator.
It's a good point. And they're going to think, once we discover they're, you're right, a superior species, we may want to kill them because we are threatened. That's like human nature. You know that, right? You know, even in companies, you get somebody in, you think he's going to take your job away because they're smarter. You want to get rid of the guy, right? You know, mm-hmm. but it's human nature. You know, again, a lot of this, how much is science fiction and how much is fact? And that's the scary thing. I do know. Well, you know, I'm sure most listeners, I know you're familiar with like the Jason Bourne movies, you know, where mm-hmm. the CIA is trying to make a super soldier. And that has been done. It hasn't, supposedly hasn't been done successfully, but we don't know. It's like all these projects that were launched back in the 60s, which we
call before the 60s, since the 40s, actually 1938 is when it started.
Well, you know, you wonder how long they have been going on. It's a good point. But they always claim, well, we ended the project, you know, we cut it off. But how do you know it didn't go on? It's like when the Soviet, remember, I was spokesperson for the Russians for 8 years in their research. And when the Soviet Union fell, everybody said the KGB was gone. I remember, do you remember that at all? And I always kept saying, no, they just went underground. And they did. Now they're back. I mean, so one of the I worked with several people involved in the early black ops, and mostly with remote viewings, sensory deprivation. That was one of my specialties. A lot of the stuff was pretty I don't know if we mentioned this, but at least 50, 60 universities were involved in some of this research, you know, that was secretive. And a lot of people were very hurt for life because of it. They were using hallucinogenic drugs compounded with sensory deprivation. That was one of my research specialties at Johns Hopkins, was sensory deprivation. But the point being is that some of the early projects, they probably not familiar to many listeners, were Gondola Wish, Sunstreak. There's something called Sigma 4 Alpha, but that's a questionable project. So what happened eventually? And I don't remember the years. They combined them into what they called MK Ultra. And MK Ultra was just an overhead title of all these sub projects.
Sub projects, yeah.
Yeah, and then MK Ultra. Then they took MK Ultra and the kind of fringe projects and put them under Stargate. And I think it was about in the 80s. I don't remember. You're good at dates, but they then said we totally defunded Stargate, you know? So
yeah, that's why we're missing $8 trillion over 25 years.
Yeah, you wonder what happened to it, huh?
I'm not a mathematician, but I can tell you where it went.
Hey, we're not
the G.
We're not suckers, are we? Huh? We weren't born yesterday,
Yeah.
But the question is today, and you know they could hide money probably even easier today. You know what's going on? And I have mixed feelings on this, because if it's something that's going to make us safer, get us a better defense, help the human species, have a cure for cancer, all this stuff, I mean, fine. But if it's for sinister purposes, you know, who was I just talking to someone about? There's no privacy anymore, right? There's Alexa. There's a friend of mine had a high position in Homeland Security years ago, and he said to me, this is many years ago too, so about at least 10 years ago, he said to me, you know, John, when you go out in the morning, you're videotaped by about 30 different places. And I said, you're kidding. And he started going through, you know, like you go, you get gas and you're videotaped. Then you go to the bank, right? Then you go, and I was like, oh my God. And this, everybody knows this now, but people didn't know this 10 or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But think of where we are now and surveillance. And people always say, well, I don't do anything wrong and I have nothing to worry about. But who knows? Look at people that are falsely accused of things, or people working on projects that disappear, or you've got to be careful what you say. And so I don't know. I mean, it doesn't bother me, because like I said, you can't worry about it. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it. And if they're not doing it, why worry about it? Is that kind of how you look at it too? I mean, you just kind of got to accept.
I have to accept it, but the thing is that I don't want to accept it, but at the same time, I have to accept it. And it doesn't make it go away. It just makes me more awake to the fact that stuff is going on. And you can't stop it. You just got to figure out, once they drop that needle, what is going to happen and where you are in it.
I know. What I find is totally hilarious is, but actually, this is my... besides you, so I'll say my second best friend, okay?
His second best friend.
Yeah, is Jim, the guy who I've been working with for several years, the former NSA cryptologist, who, again, is the originator of cyber war. He doesn't have a cell phone. He doesn't use a computer. Doesn't go on the internet. And all our correspondence is by snail mail. You know, I mean, what does that tell you? Either he knows something, or he's paranoid, or maybe both, you know?
I think both. A little column A, a little column B.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I mean, obviously, your mail's not safe either. People think.
No, that's why I smirked. I'm like, your mail is not safe either.
Yeah. And we, and one time we thought PGP encryption was safe, which was like the ultimate. Now they're able to break PGP. I mean, that's amazing. I know you know a lot about computer. People would really be surprised how knowledgeable you are. And I don't say this to make you feel good. You are an incredible lady, but you know a lot of areas. And you know that almost all these encryptions that were thought safe have all been broken now. So, and even scramblers on phones, a lot of people use scramblers on phones. They can be broken so easily. So, oh, yes. I mean, you and I aren't interested in that. You know, we're not in illegal drugs or this or that. You know, those kind of people are more, you know, want the privacy.
And if you want to employ me gainfully through the government, I don't care. Like I said, make me a cyborg kitty. Cyborg kitty person. I'm right here.
Oh, that's fun. So anyway, but it is interesting because I keep telling people we really don't know what's going on. We don't know what's put out there. The big word for me today is people always ignore this, and it's the key word. And you and I have said this many times. You brought it up, I think, before me, is disinformation. Mm-hmm. That is their game. And it's huge. Also taking the truth and mixing it with the false. So yep. Remember, once on Facebook, I posted half of what I say is true, half is false. I'm not going to tell you which is which. And half is both. And I need a class in remedial math. You know, I mean, joking around. But it's like, you know, that's almost like, and I don't want to get into religions. It's like a lot of scriptures and ancient texts. There's a lot of history in there and truth, but there's a lot of allegory, myths, and stories. And that's where the biblical and the scholars of the Quran and ancient Bhagavad Gita, that comes in. They try to look for a common strand that, yeah, maybe there was a flood, a local flood in Mesopotamia, and they look for dendrochronology. But in the real life, I mean, that's a true thing, and we don't know. I won't mention names, but there's a lot of people, and Joe's probably more familiar with this stuff than I am, famous people in the ufology area that people have took for granted as being authentic, and I don't know if you call them whistleblowers, but when research was done, there was a lot of questions about their credibility. I worked very closely with Stan Friedman, and I were really good friends. He was always usually the first guest on any of my radio shows. We were that good of friends when he was alive. He always sent me all his books free, signed them. We did a lot of radio shows together. He was a wonderful man. He would joke, and he would say, "Have slides, we'll travel." For the older listeners, Paladin was the Western guy. Have gun, we'll travel. Mm-hmm. And Stan would always say, "Have slides, we'll travel." But Stan was telling me he did a lot of research on many of these people who claimed to have worked for the government and this and that. And a lot of the stories and the dates and the research didn't jive. Now, I'm not saying they were lying or fakes, but you got to have credibility. So if you make a claim, you know, you worked here or you did this or you did this research, I think you should back it up with some kind of evidence, like my non-disclosure statement, you know? When people tell me they work for the government on a secret project, the first thing I ask them is, did you sign an NDA? Mm-hmm. And if they say no, I stop listening to them. Then I ask them, if you signed the NDA, what was the most unusual thing about it? Mm-hmm. And if that there's no expiration date.
Uh-huh.
So if, you know, they don't know that or they never signed one, it's like, would they be brought into a top secret information without signing an NDA? When I posted this for a joke on Facebook, some people wrote and they said, that last part looks exactly like an NDA, you know, they worked in it. But so the problem is now, are they put out by the government for disinformation? Do they honestly believe it and it's in their imagination? Or did they really do, and here's the other thing, did they really do this and the government is changing the past to discredit them? That's an interesting possibility, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, we're really not answering any question. We're not answering questions. We're raising more, but it's kind of fun to think about it, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, you said something very interesting, and I hope it didn't go by people's too quickly. You said this stuff started even earlier, maybe the 30s, the 20s.
Yeah. I have evidence to prove that it was in the 30s, yeah.
And also, you know, like during World War II, the Foo Fighters and all the strange stuff that happened. And What did the Nazis do that we don't know? Is it all that? Is that just for people to be able to write books on it, or is there some truth behind it? I found that fascinating because there is no question the Nazis had a great interest in the occult. That was one of my, I studied them for years. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of evidence. A lot of it was destroyed or I gotta tell you a funny joke. Years ago, I had to pick up a friend of a relative in New York who came over from Germany. And this is when the Berlin Wall was up. It was that long ago because we were having a baptism in New York. And the godmother, he was the brother of the godmother. I had to pick him up in place in New York because he got over from, he was in East Germany and some big lawyer got him out or something. It was interesting. And he was staying with this person. So I was taking German when I was at Johns Hopkins because I could never learn a language. I had enough trouble with English. I failed at Spanish, French, Swahili. You mentioned it. So I figured, what's left?
Because Swahili is so easy.
Yeah. Let me try German. And I really liked it. So I meet the guy he's staying with, and he's a tall, you know, good-looking older guy and strong German accent. And I said, I'm learning German in graduate school. I thought, you know, maybe I could speak a little to him. And I said, did you come here from Germany? And he goes, no, Argentina. I said, yeah, after the war, I went to Argentina. And then in 1959, I came to the United States. I didn't ask him any more questions after that. I really should have.
You don't want to implicate yourself?
But I mean, the question is how many, you know, got out on those U-boats. They had to be pretty important, I would think. But one of my regrets, I really wish I would have asked him more. I don't know. He probably wouldn't have told me, but it would have been interesting to get an inside information. So I don't know why I brought that up. I just thought it was a funny story because it's like, hey, yay, he came over from Argentina. So I wasted half the show BSing with you, but I enjoyed that so much. So should we talk a little bit about photography and the paranormal?
Yes, please.
And if we need to continue it next week, we can, because
we always can.
I believe, and you're the one actually responsible for this show, and I appreciate it. I asked you what a good topic would be, and I think you really hit it. I get a lot of interest on psychic photography, aura photography, Kirlian photography. You know, so much of that on Facebook because they know I'm a biophysicist, and you know I know the physics of it, and I've experimented with it for like over 20 years. So I believe this new type of photography, and we'll get to this one later, the aura photography is going to be the cutting edge of psychic research for the future. And I wanted to say that at the beginning, because I'm going to debunk a lot of the previous types of photography, and I don't want people to think I'm going to wind up debunking all of it, okay? Mm-hmm. I do believe aura photography has the potential of really discovering incredible psychic and paranormal information, but it's still in its infancy. So we could start with something similar, like simple photography, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most famous ghost photography pictures. Now, for those just listening, I'm holding up a picture of Mary Todd Lincoln. And in the back is like the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. Can you see that? Do I got that position pretty good?
Yep, you do.
And for those again listening, it's this was taken, I think 1872 in Matthew Brady's studio. Matthew Brady was a famous Civil War photographer. Every Civil War buff knows who he is. But by a photographer named William Mumler, who turned out to be a real swindler. And this was proven to be a fake photography. But I know personally people.
It's too perfect.
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, a friend of mine that I visit, an older gentleman, lost his wife about 8 years ago and showed me a picture that he had in the camera. And it has a picture of her and whatever. And so the first question is, could it have been a double exposure, you know, all that kind of things. But yes, and I'd say in 90% of the cases, they could be images maybe picked up on the film, and then later when the picture's taken, it's superimposed. But I've got to say, there's some pictures that I've seen, and I don't have examples with me, that I can't explain away, you know?
Yeah. They just,
there was no double exposure. But I always say, like, when people, oh God, everyone sends me pictures of stuff, of orbs and this and that. And I say, like, you got to send these to, like, Brooks Institute or some really top-notch photographer.
Or CCPI.
Yeah. And I worked with people with the JPL when I was working on the Shroud. But places that really can, you know, do that. And there's some photographs that come back and say, you know, we can't explain it. It's not a double exposure. So, but I don't see a lot of potential that. Do you see many of these days, kind of normal photography with paranormal things? I don't see that many. Do you?
I've got stuff that would blow your mind.
Can you show it next week?
Can I show it next week?
Do you have it with you?
Possibly. It's on my hard drive for my old computer. So if I can pull it off the hard drive, yeah.
That'd be interesting. That's one thing I don't, a lot of these pictures are like very personal to the people that have shown me, and, you know, they don't want them. And I understand that, you know, it's their loved ones they lost and they feel it's personal, so they don't want it shown on TV or something. But to me, without even analyzing them and just talking to them and the situation, is very convincing. So that's one area. The other area that was an early area of paranormal photography was infrared or thermal imaging, you know, which is measuring the heat in the environment. You know,
right.
My dissertation was on the infrared system of rattlesnakes, because rattlesnakes, they call them pit vipers because they have little, you know, pits on the side, which are innervated by nerves that are sensitive to infrared radiation. We can't see that. And bees can see in the ultraviolet region. And in fact, one of the interesting, I know I'm digressing, but there was these early experiments. There was this whole bed of white flowers, and they were photographing the bees, and they would always go through the same pattern. And they couldn't understand how the bees could distinguish one white flower from another. And they took a picture of the flowers in UV, and they were incredible patterns. And then they discovered bees had UV in their vision, where our vision is just at that edge,
right,
of the UV. So infrared is heat, and rattlesnakes can see in the infrared. And a lot of ghost hunters, and I know you do probably more of this than I do, but that's one of the tools where there's a drop in temperature.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Another show will talk about haunted stuff, but remember that I brought that mirror back from that haunted house yesterday. And
that is so cool.
Yeah. And I showed a couple psychics already, and right away they felt there was a portal. And it's funny, when I went out, it was in my hallway because it was really heavy. I just got it out of the car, and I'm not ready to lift stuff. Every time I went by it, the whole temperature felt like it dropped 4 degrees. And then when I went in the garage, which should be colder, I felt warm. So there's something going on with that. And so, it would be interesting to put like an infrared camera on that over a period of time, see what happens. You know, so the problem is, though, all you can do is get kind of heat radiance. And I don't know what you can really prove with that. I mean, to me, that's pretty phenomenal. If the room temperature is 70 degrees, and when you're near an object, it drops 5 degrees and there's no reason, right? You know, like an exorcism, you know? So a lot of this, it may not be hard scientific controlled experiments, but you can't discount it. Do you feel that way too about kind of thermal imaging? It kind of has its limits.
It has its limits, but at the same time, there's stuff that I've seen in thermal imaging that I would have never seen with another camera.
That's a good point. Maybe what you're saying is we just got to combine all these tools and overlap them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Each has a little piece of the pie.
Yeah. Something. Invent it.
Exactly. Then I get to this, which unfortunately probably 90% of the people out there on Facebook and read paranormal stuff believe that it's an authentic type of photography, and it has been debunked decades ago. In fact, I was going to apply for a government grant to do research in this area, but I got promoted to dean of student affairs and I got out of the research. But it's Curlian photography. Some people pronounce it Curlian, but Seaman Curlian was the discoverer of it back, I think it was 1930s. And the idea, most of people have, you know, if you still go to psychic fairs, sometimes people do this. And the technique was very simple. You would have like an insulator, you know, whatever it could be, and then a piece of a glass with a film. And then you would put your hand on top of it. And then between the hand, at the top of the hand and the insulator, a high voltage, high frequency electrical discharge would pass. And you would see those beautiful glowing images. Would you believe I didn't pull an example of that? I mean, those are all over the place. But I think most people have seen them, don't you think, Seraphine? Some aspect of that. And it's like, wow, is this the aura of the person's energy? Because you remember seeing like rays shooting out of the fingers and all kind of colors. Well, it's really been proven. I mean, really beyond a doubt. And as a physicist, I read all the papers. I think some came out of Caltech. But it's basically, it's like ionization of water molecules. They're actually energized by the electrical discharge. It's called electrical coronal discharge. And simply, it's the moisture contained in your hand or whatever in the subject that's transferred onto the plate under the influence of the current. And it varies because there's all kinds of ionization, you know, and so you can get incredible colors. So it really has to do with the water content and the ionization. Coronoplasma discharge is what it's called. But here's, you know, I say I'm a skeptic, but I'm a believer, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think they could explain away that famous leaf image, you know, when you take in this the whole leaf and then you cut part of the leaf away and you still see the whole image.
Uh-huh.
Or people that have lost part of a finger and then when you take it, you get the whole finger.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
I don't have an answer. I don't know if you have any speculation, but I don't think you can say that's coronal. Where the heck is the damn finger to produce the water? Now, the leaf thing, if it's the leaf was put on there and you cut it off, maybe some residual water stayed on. But the phantom limb syndromes and stuff.
That would explain it.
Could be more than just coronal discharge. What do you think? Are you still open on that possibly?
Yeah, I think definitely. So, you know, aside from that, I was going to ask if you knew that there were several people before Carillion that coined the phrase electrophotography.
Coined the phrase what? Electrophotography?
Yeah.
No, tell me about that.
In 1889,
when I was born?
Ha ha.
You're not going to make those jokes.
No, I won't.
Thank you.
A man named Chuck Navratil coined the word. And then 7 years later, in 1896, a French experimenter, H. Barduc, actually created electrographs of hands and leaves. And then in 1898, Polish-Belarusian engineer Jakub Jodl-Narkiewicz demonstrated electrography at the 5th exhibition of Russian Technological Society.
That's the only one I knew. I knew about that one, but I didn't know about the first two.
Yeah, and then they did these pictures, which I'm going to blow up here, so you should be wonderful. Able to see here in a second. And they look like that. Can you see?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Fantastic.
And those are the 1889 ones.
Wow, that's fantastic. Boy, that's great research. Man, I would have loved to have you as a graduate student. Oh, God.
I would have been your TA.
You've been more than a graduate student. That's great. I did not know of those other two. I heard about the third one. I didn't know a lot about it, but that, see, that to me is very important, because what you're doing is you're tying in this historical gap. It wasn't just a jump. In anything, you want to show a developmental history. Can you imagine if we could get a hold of, maybe it's out there, the original electrical circuitry and equipment? Yeah. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah, I'm not an electrical engineer. I'm an electronic hobbyist. I'm only limited so far, but I like when I worked with Joe Parr, he was the brilliant electrician. So that was fascinating. So, you know, I guess what we could say is that in most cases, Curlian photography can probably be ruled out, but there is those 1% of cases we get these strange results we can't explain by coronal discharge. Would you agree? Or 10%?
Yeah.
Whatever. I have a set of those goggles where we talked about infrared back in the 30s. I'm not prepared to talk about this, but back in the 30s, special goggles were invented that could have a person see their aura. And I have a pair in my other room. Most of them, so they claim, were destroyed or confiscated by the government. I don't know if that's true, but they're known as aura goggles. And took me 5 years to find an original pair from the 1930s. And I bought every book that came out on those. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, they work. They were. Cool. And maybe we'll do a show on that. And then I knew a guy who actually was on one of my radio shows. He spent like $50,000 of his own money to try to redevelop them. And he sent me prototypes. And I'm getting messages from all over the place saying they can't find him. They don't know where he is. His website is down. And my numbers, I got to find old numbers. But I think, you know, he may have just changed an occupation. I don't think there's anything sinister, but it, you know, it makes you wonder. Maybe he ran out of money, but he was a really great, great scientist, and he was developing modern prototypes of it. He would send them to me to test them out. But you know what? Those older ones to me were the best. There was something there, and those 1938 aura goggles. I'll bring them next week when we do the show, and I'll take them out. But there's a technique you do, you use them. You got to be very careful. You could damage your retina using them, you know? So it's not something you just put on and walk around and see aliens like in the movie, you know? But
oh, come on.
And I see, you know, I was going to make a joke, but I'm going to skip it, okay? But you can... But when you use them right, actually, I've done this. You can see the energy coming out of your fingers. And this is what's cool. I can put my fingers like this, and the energies will connect. And as I'm watching it, I move it, and they move like in waves. If it was an after image, it wouldn't do that, you know? So very fascinating. I got to put those in the safety deposit box. That could be one of the only sets still in existence, but... Now the whole world knows I have them. Not as smart as me, but anyway. there's so much stuff out there, isn't there? That's kind of like weird.
There's all kinds of stuff. It's weird and amazing. And it's a lot of people would go, oh, that never happened. And it's just one of those things that they faked or whatever. And it's like, you can't fake this. If you've ever watched anybody do it, it's not something that you fake. I've actually been in a lab and watched somebody done it.
See, I mean, that's the thing. And you look and you say, wait a minute, this is really happening. And I can't explain it. You know why I think the older ones work better? This person, what it does is it blocks off the visual field and only lets the infrared and UV in on the sides of your vision, which you can pick up some. Mm-hmm. That's the key to it. And that's where we think the area of the ghosts are, the energy. And the problem is, though, when you don't have a visual image coming in, your pupils dilate. So if you look at bright light and certain things, it could hurt your retina. That's part of it. Plus, it's unfiltered UV and infrared coming in much stronger. So you see the danger. I mean, it's not something to use casually. So But I think the older ones work better was because the newer ones he designed, he put in filters for the UV and infrared to protect the eyes better. And I think by doing that, he lost a lot of the spectrum where these images occur. But this could be like the movie, you know, you put the glasses on and you see the aliens, you know.
Yes.
I heard, and again, this is all speculation. One of the reasons the government confiscated them is that they used this type of stuff in their cryptology and their coding. So mm-hmm. they didn't want, you know, people to, you got to be kidding. We only got a couple minutes. God, I BS too much, don't I? Well, actually, I covered everything up to the aura photography. So I'm just going to show really quick. I got a couple minutes, right? And we'll talk about this next week. But I don't know. Where can I start? Let me show a couple plates. This is interesting. This, by the way, is like an aura picture of me without holding anything. Can you see it's like indigo and pink?
Yeah, hold it still.
Okay.
Yep.
Then there's a ring I have, which is known as a Nephilim ring, which came out of the Marie Laveau mansion, that supposedly she went into a cave and it was able to break off two horns. And then this is me holding that ring. Pretty big difference. Huh?
Back up a little bit and hold it still.
Back a little bit?
Yeah, and then just hold still. Okay. Oh, there we go.
Pretty big difference, huh?
There is a big difference.
And this is the ring, and we'll talk more about this next week. I wanted to, you know, I promised to show this, but this is the ring that came out of her mansion when it was liquidated, and those supposedly were two horns. The Nephilim, she claimed, had two small horns, and she broke them off, made two rings from them, and made it with special silver with symbols. And I looked at this under the digital computerized microscope, and it is a carotene, but it could be animal. Who knows what it is? So I'm going to be hopefully having one of my material testing experts look at it and find out what it is. And then I've done stuff with crystal. This is a Toltec alabaster skull. Mm-hmm. And in the back is a picture of a warrior holding the scalp of his enemy. Can you see that? Am I holding that okay?
Yep, you're holding fine.
And
that's really cool.
It's authentic. It came from a museum, from a curator. And
belongs in a museum.
Yeah, it really does. And I tell you what happened was, when I first got that, I brought it to a friend of mine who has a computerized aura cam. So it's real time. So they have my aura picture. Then I picked this up, and all of a sudden, the lady almost fell off the chair because what she said she saw was a green burst of energy coming from my forehead, and then a burst of energy from the skull merging and forming two layers of green energy. This is hard to see. The picture didn't come out well.
Yeah, I see it.
I wish but there are two layers of green energy. But what really shocked her, she never saw like aura energy burst out all of a sudden and then mm-hmm. merge. So I don't know what that means with this skull. And then next week I'm going to show a crucifix supposedly owned by a Templar, which actually changed colors on me from silver to gold. And I documented that in my book, because when I first got the crucifix, it was silver. And it was from the Marie Laveau mansion. There it is. I mean, this is before it changed color. I mean, that's silver, right? I mean, there's no question about it. And then if you put this next to it, I don't know how this is going to work. There's you know, changing color.
Yeah, okay. We got to say bye-bye.
You want to do the ending credits? And thank you, Seraphine, for a great show. And thank you, Joe. And I'll let you... And God bless you all. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening, guys. This has been Seraphine Hurley and Dr. John DeSalvo with Para X Hour. We'll be back next Monday at 5 p.m., 6 p.m. Eastern Time with Para X Hour here on UPRN Talk Radio 107.7 FM, New Orleans. Good night.
Good night.
See why more people pick Patpac Honda. Shop over 700 of your favorite new Hondas, like a new 2019 Honda Accord LX front-wheel drive sedan. Lease for $249 a month, 36 months, 12,000 miles per year, and zero security deposit. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport. Online at patpachonda.com. Stock number KA142993. Automatic $2,099 down payment plus tax, tax, and title fee. To qualified buyer, see dealer for details. Ends 10/31/19. See why more people pick Patpac Honda. Shop over 700 of your favorite new Hondas, like a new 2019 Honda Accord LX front-wheel drive sedan. Lease for $249 a month, 36 months, 12,000 miles per year, and zero security deposit. Visit us at 11151 US 49 in Gulfport. Online at patpachonda.com. Stock number KA142993. Automatic $2,099 down payment plus tax, tax, and title fee. To qualified buyer, see dealer for details. Ends 10/31/19.